Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Hello and welcome to the deep dive. Today we are cracking open a novel that remains one of the most powerful and challenging philosophical statements ever written. Albert Camus' 1942 classic, The Stranger, or L'Étranger, absolutely. Camus, a Nobel laureate from French Algeria, he's just essential reading for understanding the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And what's crucial for us today, I think, is his philosophical stance. You know, while he's often studied alongside existentialists like Sartre, he very firmly carved out his own corner, absurdism.
Yeah, that distinction is paramount, isn't it, to really getting this book. For those of you diving in, maybe for the first time, absurdism isn't the belief that life is meaningless. That's more like nihilism.
Right. Instead, Camus defines the absurd as this profound conflict. It's the human heart's innate, almost desperate search for rational meaning, for purpose or order.
Mm-hmm. Colliding, often violently, with the universe's total silent indifference.
Yeah, and if we connect that to the bigger picture, Camus actually rejected existentialism because he felt it was a kind of philosophical leap of faith.
Right.
You know, existentialists argue that since the universe has no inherent meaning, we must create our own meaning through our actions, our freedom.
Okay.
But Camus saw this as, well, almost like cheating, as avoiding the core problem. The absurd demands we confront that meaningless reality head on, without escape, without comfort.
And that confrontation is perfectly embodied by our protagonist, Mersault. So our mission today is really to track his journey from what you might call an unconscious outsider to eventually a conscious rebel. Mm-hmm. He's a man who is ultimately condemned, not really for the murder he commits, but for his radical honesty and his complete refusal to play what Camus called the artificial games of society. Mm. And the novel just throws us straight into his world with that famous opening line, "Mother died today, or maybe yesterday, I can't be sure."
Wow, yeah. It's like literature's shortest, most effective character profile. It immediately signals that Mersault exists outside the normal flow of time and emotional expectation.
He seems completely locked into the physical, the sensory reality of the present moment, the date of his mother's death. That's abstract. The fact of her death is just a reality he accepts.
Exactly. And part one of the novel is essentially a detailed chronicle of this purely sensory life in Algiers. Mersault isn't immoral. He doesn't actively seek to hurt anyone. He is amoral.
Amoral. Okay. He's guided entirely by immediate physical sensations.
Right here.
The oppressive heat, the taste of coffee, the feeling of water while swimming, or, you know, physical desire. He makes no plans, holds no long-term ambitions, reflects on, well, pretty much nothing. And this amorality immediately clashes with social norms, right? At the funeral in Marengo, he shows absolutely no expected grief.
None.
He smokes a cigarette, drinks milk coffee with the caretaker. He even sleeps during the vigil. His primary focus seems to be the overwhelming, crushing heat and that blinding light.
And the observers at the funeral, they act as the first jury, don't they?
Yeah.
Silently condemning him for his lack of performance. They see him as cold, but the truth is, he's simply honest.
Right.
He's bothered by the heat, so he mentions the heat. He doesn't feel sorrow, so he doesn't produce tears. He just refuses to wear the mask.
And then, like, the very next day, which the court will later use as Exhibit A of his monstrous nature, he runs into Marie Cardona, a former colleague. They go swimming, see a comedy film, and start this casual physical affair.
Yeah, and Marie represents simple, conventional pleasures.
Yeah.
She eventually asks if he wants to marry her, and his response, it just defines his utter passivity.
What does he say?
Well, he basically says he doesn't particularly care, but he would if she wanted to.
Mm.
It's an arrangement based on convenience, not any kind of profound commitment.
Wow. That passive acceptance, it really runs through part one, doesn't it? He gets drawn into his neighbor Ramond Sintes's messy drama. Mm. Ramond, a warehouse guard and known pimp.
Yeah, reputed pimp.
He's trying to lure back his cheating mistress and needs Mersault to write this manipulative letter.
And Mersault agrees. Simply because, as the source material notes, it is easier than refusing. He doesn't believe in Raymond's twisted ideas about honor or revenge, but he just lacks the drive to say no.
It's incredible.
And this casual agreement, purely out of convenience, helping this volatile man.
Yeah.
Well, that's the spark that lights the fire.
Okay, so this passivity leads him right into the pivotal transition where his passive existence kind of runs headlong into active fate. Raymond's conflict with the mistress's brother and his friends, referred to as the Arabs in the text, it escalates near a beach house where Mersault and Marie are staying.
Mm-hmm. The initial confrontation ends with Raymond getting cut.
Mm-hmm.
But the environment, the setting, is the true character here, you could argue. Well, Mersault returns to the beach alone, carrying Raymond's revolver, drawn not by any sense of revenge, but by the need to escape the unbearable heat of the house. The sources really emphasize the terrifying, oppressive nature of the sun. It's described almost as a physical assault, not some gentle warmth.
Right. And he encounters the Arab man again. The light flashes off the blade the man is holding. And Mersault interprets the glare, the heat, the physical pressure as a direct threat, an assault from the entire hostile environment.
And then comes the impulsive act. He shoots the man once. Then, almost senselessly, he fires four more shots into the corpse. It's an act born entirely of physical impulse and environmental pressure, completely disconnected from any recognized human motive, like jealousy or revenge. And that sensory reality is the only truth he can offer the police. When they ask him why he did it, he tells them, quite simply, it was because of the sun.
Hmm.
And society, it can't compute that, right? Society demands a psychological narrative. Madness, passion, maybe calculated malice. Mersault offers a literal physical truth that just negates all those emotional and moral frameworks. So this raises the critical question that really defines the entire book. Can a radically honest man, someone who refuses to internalize or even externalize meaning, can he survive in a society built entirely on agreed-upon fictions?
Mm.
The answer, according to Camus here, is definitively no. And we see it play out starkly in part two, which is the ultimate absurdist theater. The court's function stops being about justice for the victim.
Yeah.
And starts being about the execution of Mersault's soul.
Yeah, it's not about the murder anymore, is it? It's about him. The court is judging his character, not his crime. The prosecution shifts the focus entirely onto his past behavior, arguing that the funeral incident proves he's morally bankrupt, a monster capable of anything.
Exactly. And this is where those artificial games of society are played out in full view. The court demands a performance of remorse he just cannot give. Witnesses are brought in to testify about his failure to adhere to the social contract.
Like who?
Well, the director of the old people's home testifies about his calmness, his smoking. The caretaker confirms he drank coffee. Small details.
And Marie's testimony is completely weaponized. While she intends to vouch for his character, her honest account swimming, starting their physical relationship, seeing a comedy the day after the funeral, it's all twisted into cold-blooded evidence.
Mm-hmm. The prosecution paints this timeline that supposedly proves he has no heart, that he felt no grief for the woman who gave him life. It's brutal.
So the prosecutor's closing argument must be pretty damning then.
Incredibly so. He ties the non-crime Mersault's lack of performed grief directly to the murder. He essentially accuses him of burying his mother with a criminal's heart. The court decides that the man who broke the moral emotional code of the universe is far more dangerous than the man who simply killed another person.
Wow. So he's guilty because, because he's different. The verdict of guilt is therefore based on his authenticity, his atheism, his refusal to lie about his indifference. He's condemned because he exposed the hypocrisy of the entire system just by being himself. He becomes a stranger, even in his own trial.
Yeah.
And Mersault is then left alone in the prison cell, awaiting execution, which brings us to the novel's philosophical climax, that confrontation with the chaplain. This is like the last desperate attempt by institutionalized society, by religion, to force Mersault to find hope and meaning, where the chaplain tries repeatedly to make him repent, seek God, find solace in the promise of an afterlife. He represents that sort of comfort blanket of imposed meaning.
But Mersault rejects all of it. He remains fixed on the physical, finite reality of his life and his impending death. And this pressure from the chaplain, it finally provokes Mersault's cathartic, almost volcanic outburst of rage.
Ah.
He grabs the chaplain, shouting out all his frustration, his despair. It's this incredible release, a final clearing of the air, which paradoxically leads to his greatest moment of clarity.
And that outburst, it leads to this moment of absolute clarity, you said. What does he realize?
He realizes that the entire universe is, just like him, utterly and benignly indifferent to human destiny. It doesn't love him, doesn't hate him. It simply is, vast and silent. And in accepting this fundamental absurdity, he finds profound freedom.
Wow. The entire meaning of his life, his rebellion, it's crystallized in those final, really breathtaking lines of the novel. For the first time in that night alive with signs and stars, I opened myself to the gentle indifference of the world. Finding it so much like myself, so like a brother, really, I felt that I had been happy and that I was happy again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the moment of transformation then. He moves from being this passive, almost unconscious outsider to a conscious, absurd hero who has faced the abyss and accepted the terms of existence. His final desire, it's quite something, is to be greeted at his execution by a crowd shouting hate.
Yeah,
And why hatred? Because the hatred would confirm his permanent, deliberate separation from the world's comforting lies and illusions. It validates his integrity, his chosen freedom. He no longer needs the approval of the world he is leaving.
The profound reflection this novel leaves us with, I think, is how much of our daily emotional life, the sorrow we might display, the plans we make, the hope we cling to, is genuinely felt versus how much is simply a necessary performance we stage to avoid being condemned, like Mersault was.
And ultimately, Mersault's journey suggests that perhaps true freedom comes not from successfully finding some predetermined meaning, but from the radical, sometimes difficult, uncompromising honesty required to embrace the absence of it. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.